Lycoming loses a legal battle over crankshaft liability. Bombardier reports the first flight of the CRJ-1000 prototype. And Eclipse Aviation quietly shuffles management. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, September 4th, 2008. The Supreme Court of Texas has denied an appeal by Lycoming, effectively ending a six-year legal battle with a victory for a Texas company that made crankshafts for Lycoming engines. The law firm of Rose Walker LLP, based in Dallas, represented Interstate Southwest Limited, which made the parts. Attorney Marty Rose says the ruling affirms their client made no mistakes in manufacturing engine crankshafts, which later failed in Lycoming engines, causing crashes and deaths, and grounding aircraft around the world while Lycoming issued recalls. The appellate court upheld the trial court's judgment that Lycoming's own design defect was the sole cause of the crankshaft failures and not the manufacturing process. Lycoming had asked the courts to force Interstate Southwest to pay for new crankshafts. Bombardier Aerospace announced yesterday that its prototype CRJ-1000 next-gen jetliner made its successful inaugural flight at Mirabel, Quebec, earlier in the day. The company says the plane took off at 10:02 a.m. Eastern Time and landed 3 hours and 25 minutes later, reached 30,000 feet and 260 knots, and successfully tested flaps, slats, and the fly-by-wire rudder. Jean-Guy Blondin, director of CRJ programs, was happy. Quote, "We're very satisfied with the readiness of our prototype, which is embarking on its journey to type certification thanks to the dedicated work of our suppliers and employees." Unquote. That journey will bring the CRJ-1000 prototype to the Bombardier Flight Test Center in Wichita, Kansas, where next year it'll be joined by the first production unit to prepare for review by the Flight Operations Evaluation Board. That's composed of pilots from Transport Canada, the FAA, and the European Aviation Safety Agency. The company claims the medium-haul aircraft will offer a 15% reduction in operating costs compared to its competition. Four airlines have placed firm orders for 63 aircraft so far. ANN has learned that Eclipse Aviation sent a notice Tuesday to current Eclipse 500 owners and position holders, announcing a new divisional structure as part of the company's ongoing operational excellence strategy. Former Eclipse Chief Operating Officer Peg Bilson has been appointed President and General Manager of the Eclipse Manufacturing Division. Mike McConnell, previously VP of Sales and Marketing, has been named President and General Manager of the Eclipse Customer Division. Mark Borseth, Eclipse's Chief Financial Officer, will oversee both divisions, which are now called Process Improvement Teams. All three execs will continue to report to CEO Roel Pieper, who expressed confidence in the letter. Quote, "I have absolute confidence in this leadership team's ability to deliver the profitable results this company requires," unquote. The changes follow hundreds of layoffs and temporary production cuts Pieper has said were necessary to keep the company running through an expected round of outside funding. He reassured Albuquerque, New Mexico, that the company has no plans to move production elsewhere, but immediately followed that up by saying all aspects of the company's operation are being evaluated. Customers waiting for promised avionics upgrades and those awaiting refunds of their deposits following cancellations have been told they're going to have to wait. The company has previously stated it plans to resume full production rates in 2009 to fill orders for about 2,600 aircraft. The U.S. Department of Transportation says flights operated by the nation's largest airlines arrived on time at a higher rate in July than in both the previous month and July of last year. The monthly air travel consumer report was released Wednesday by DOT's Bureau of Transportation Statistics. The 19 carriers reporting on-time performance recorded an overall on-time arrival rate of 75.7% in July. July last year came in at 69.8%, and June this year at 70.8%. In July this year, the carriers canceled 1.7% of their scheduled domestic flights. That was down from 2.1% last year. Mishandled baggage dropped to 4.86 reports per 1,000 passengers in July. That's a big improvement over July 2007's 7.96. You can find lots more detail on the report in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. Up next on ANN, NTSB says a medevac helicopter lost its rotor before it went down. The TSA clears a Muslim pilot to return to work after 5 months. And the U.S. government sues Boeing for an alleged overcharge. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for September 4th, 2008. I'm Paul Flack. We're still days away from the release of the National Transportation Safety Board's preliminary report on last weekend's crash of a medevac helicopter in Indiana. But investigators released one important piece of the puzzle on Tuesday. Decatur County Sheriff Darrell Templeton and NTSB spokesman Peter Knudsen told the Associated Press, quote, "The rotor blades were separated and came to rest about 200 yards away. We have witness reports reporting the same thing," unquote. The Bell 206B's crew of three was returning home Sunday from a community fundraiser for the Burney, Indiana Volunteer Fire Department when the accident occurred. The helicopter reportedly plunged into a field almost immediately after takeoff in a nose-down attitude. Air Evac EMS, the operator, has released the identities of the three crew members lost. Pilot Roger Warren, flight nurse Sandra Pearson, and flight paramedic and base manager Wade Weston all flew from a recently opened base at Rush Memorial Hospital in nearby Rushville. Sunday's accident was the second fatal crash of an air evac helicopter this year. Three people were lost in January when their Bell 206A crashed near Tuscumbia, Alabama, while conducting an aerial search for a missing hunter. In April 2004, another air evac helicopter crashed near Evansville, injuring three crew members but killing the patient being transported. The NTSB ruled that accident was caused by an improperly set altimeter. The Transportation Security Administration has ended what looks to have been an egregious overstepping of its mission. The Associated Press reports the TSA yesterday cleared Eric Scherfen to return to flight duty with Colgan Air, 5 months after he was suspended by the company. As ANN reported, Scherfen sued the Department of Homeland Security and other federal agencies last month, demanding that his name be stricken from the so-called watch list. Scherfen is a U.S. combat veteran of the First Gulf War. He converted to Islam in 1994 and married a Pakistani woman. Neither of them have a criminal record, nor any ties to terror organizations, but both were put on the list in 2006. Scherfen didn't find out until he was suspended from his year-long job as a pilot for Colgan Air this past April. The airline told him he was a positive match on the TSA's list. A TSA spokesman claimed in August, quote, "Religious and political affiliation does not impact whether an individual is placed," unquote, "on the watch list," but no other explanation was offered for Scherfen's predicament. He says he and his wife were put on the list solely because of their Muslim faith in a violation of their constitutional rights, and that it effectively blacklisted him from obtaining another job as a commercial airline pilot. While Scherfen works to regain currency to fly again, his lawyers are pressing ahead with his lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security. The U.S. government filed a federal lawsuit of its own on Tuesday against Boeing, saying the contractor deliberately inflated the price for a decoy system fitted to U.S. Air Force B-1B Lancer bombers. The Associated Press reports the lawsuit claims the Air Force paid $7.5 million more than it should have, since Boeing was able to find a cheaper source for parts needed for the system, but failed to disclose that fact during contract negotiations way back in 1990. The 57 decoy systems were designed to be towed behind the bombers to defend against attacks from ground-based missiles and shoulder-fired rockets. Boeing said it would manufacture them at its facility in Palmdale, California. The government says Boeing planned all along to close that plant and obtain parts from a subcontractor at a reduced cost. Assistant U.S. Attorney Lisa Palumbo says had the Air Force known, it would have pushed for a lower price, and that even Boeing employees warned their managers to disclose the potential savings. The AP says the Air Force paid $36 million for the kits. Under the False Claims Act, the government may recover up to 3 times the amount it overpaid, plus penalties. Alliant Tech Systems announced yesterday it has been awarded a $97 million contract for the design, development, integration, and testing of the Multi-Stage Supersonic Target, or MSST, by the Naval Air Systems Command. With incentives, the value of the MSST contract could reach $103 million. The MSST is a modern supersonic target drone that simulates a 2-stage anti-ship cruise missile threat. The U.S. Navy will use it to test weapons and combat systems against next-generation surface-to-surface anti-ship missiles that cruise at subsonic speeds, initiate a separation event, then make a supersonic dash to the intended target. The system design and development phase of the program is expected to be complete by October 2012. Alliant believes follow-on production awards could generate significant additional business for the company. Work will be performed in Sacramento and Woodland Hills, California, Plymouth, Minnesota, Elkton, Maryland, and Wichita, Kansas. Still ahead, United Airlines caves to outrage over meal cutbacks. The FAA says it fared much better with Gustav than with Katrina. And the Martin jetpack will use BRS parachutes. You're listening to AeroNews.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, September 4th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Last month, United Airlines announced it would start charging for meals in business class, even on transatlantic flights. The plan was to charge $6 for snack boxes, $9 for salads and sandwiches on flights from Dulles to Europe starting October 1st. United spokesperson Robin Urbanski tells Bloomberg the company got, quote, candid feedback, unquote, from customers. Yeah, I'll bet. On Tuesday, United quietly backed down and says it will continue serving complimentary hot meals on its longest routes. Lately, airlines seem to disregard public outrage over service cuts, but in this case, United failed to draw any of its competitors into following it over this particular customer satisfaction cliff. United says it still will end hot meal service for business class customers on longer domestic flights, replacing them with cold food, and coach passengers will still have to pay for snacks. Not surprisingly, United's pilot union, which had earlier criticized the airline's plan to charge for meals, also criticized United's flip on the decision, calling it yet another sign that United CEO Glenn Tilton is inept. Quote, our passengers deserve better than to be treated as guinea pigs by an executive who obviously lacks direction and vision, unquote. The FAA is saying now that lessons learned from Hurricanes Katrina and Rita helped its personnel to play a critical role in evacuating New Orleans and supporting law enforcement and military flights during the response to Gustav. Employees from Beaumont, Texas to the Alabama-Florida border prepared for the storm by providing a safe environment for evacuation flights and securing vital air traffic equipment. More than 4,000 critically ill patients were evacuated from New Orleans, and a record 1.9 million people evacuated the Gulf Coast in all. Gustav threatened more than 300 National Airspace System facilities. That includes 13 FAA control towers. The agency says towers quickly reopened to support recovery, including medical flights, search and rescue, law enforcement, and military operations. Several airlines expect to resume commercial service to the New Orleans area by late today. Ballistic Recovery Systems announced this week it has entered into an agreement with Martin Aircraft Company to provide the BRS-patented emergency parachute recovery system for all production model Martin jetpacks. The Martin jetpack was hyped ahead of its demo at Oshkosh this year. When the time came for the unveiling July 29th, thousands packed into Aeroshell Square and were a little surprised to see a pair of ducted fans powered by a V4 two-stroke instead of the expected jet power. The machine is aimed at U.S. Part 103 ultralight and claims 30 minutes or more endurance on 5 gallons of fuel. The machine claims the capability to carry a 280-pound pilot to 8,000 feet. At Oshkosh, it was demonstrated only in tethered flight a few feet off the ground, carrying a 140-pound teenager. But the biggest question regarded what happens if the single two-stroke engine fails below the minimum safe deployment altitude for the chute. The Martin jetpack can neither glide nor auto-rotate. BRS says its system enables the jetpack pilot to be saved during a catastrophic failure even when flying at a reasonably low altitude, particularly if the aircraft has some forward speed. The Martin jetpack is priced at $100,000 each for the first 10 units. Production of 10 to 20 units per year is anticipated starting next year. And finally, the one-year anniversary of the disappearance of Steve Fawcett came and went yesterday, and friends and admirers continue to scour the desolate Nevada landscape for any sign of what might have happened. A privately funded 10-member search party launched in July, led by Canadian geologist Simon Donato, turned up nothing new, but others keep trying. The Associated Press reports a 28-member team headed up by Robert Hyman, Lou Toulmin, and Bob Atwater began a new search August 23rd. All three belong to the New York-based Explorers Club. Fawcett was also a member. The team is concentrating its efforts close to Baron Hilton's Flying M Ranch, where Fawcett departed on his last flight on Labor Day of 2007. Hyman's team thinks Fawcett may have actually stayed closer to the Flying M Ranch than previously thought, so he's focusing on a smaller area to the west of the airfield, combing the steep canyons and gulches of the Wasik Mountain Range. A smaller search is being conducted by Mike Larson and Kelly Stevenson of Carson City, Nevada, in an area southwest of Hawthorne, Nevada. The amateur team has been limited to searching on days off from work. So far, the amateur searchers have turned up lots of junk and litter, but no sign of Fawcett. Peggy Fawcett got a judge to declare her husband legally dead back in February, but says she supports the continued efforts of searchers. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Kenny Downing, Aviation Marketing Manager at Utah Valley University. We'll talk about aviation degree programs, who needs one, and what's offered at UVU for both resident students and distance learners. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.